And I'm looking out the faces, and I can see a few tears. It's kind of funny when you look at this face. This is not tears. He's one of these young men that he's exasperating. Matter of fact, if it wasn't illegal, you'd just like to grab him and shake him really bad. This young man is so smart. To his own admission, when he's talking to Mr. Holland earlier, he lets him know that he knows all the dates. He knows all the answers to the test. If you wanted to win a music theory Jeopardy competition, Statler is your man. But here's the thing. This isn't a music theory class. The name of the class he's taking is called Music Appreciation. The goal wasn't to teach you the dates and the composers so that you could answer the questions on the test. The goal was to teach you to appreciate the concept of music. And this young man, there's only one word to describe him. He's apathetic. He comes to class on drugs. He picks at the other students that can't answer the questions. He's cocky, and he's arrogant. And it's time to teach him a lesson. But it can't be taught in a classroom. Nope. They're going to have to go to the cemetery. Because the young man that Mr. Holland taught to bang a drum, Mr. Lou Russ, has died serving his country. Sometimes the best lessons in life can only be learned in life. You see, those best lessons are, they leave a lasting impact. They kind of change us forever. They always seem to happen at the right time. Mr. Holland did not plan this, but he did seize the moment. Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe and many signs and wonders performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold their property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those that were being saved. So let's make sure I don't blow past this. This concept of teaching is important. Romans chapter 10, verses 14 and 15 says, How can they call on the one whom they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can anyone preach unless they are sent? As is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring the good news. How important is teaching? Well, if nobody teaches, nobody learns. And I don't care what the topic is. That could be Bible, that could be auto mechanics, that could be computers, that could be band. If nobody's willing to teach it, then nobody is going to learn it. And you know what? When it comes to faith, if nobody learns, then nobody believes. Again, this is one of those statements you have to let wrap through your brain. If we never teach it, and nobody ever learns who Christ is, then nobody is ever going to believe. And this teaching thing is serious business. James chapter 3, verses 1 and 2 says, "Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach are judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check." And unfortunately, when it comes to this verse, we've kind of misimplied it because we think James is discouraging us from being teachers. Now remember, James is writing to a very specific audience. They were immature people that were having problems with their tongues. And so what James is really trying to tell them is not that they shouldn't teach. He's telling them to be teachers. He was telling them what you say when you aren't teaching is just as important, if not more important, than what you say when you are teaching. Because every word that comes out of your mouth, if you stand up and you become a teacher, every word that comes out your mouth is going to be parsed. At the end of the day, teaching is, well, it's basically just telling other people what you've learned. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2, "And these things that you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others." And whether you like it or not, if you're a believer, and if you're a person that has learned, all teaching is the natural conclusion of learning. In fact, though by this time you ought to be teachers, but you need someone to teach you the elementary truths of God's word all over again. You need milk, not solid food. Do you know how you learn to play an instrument? Now, I got to tell you, I had to go out and do research. And my research was a research party of one. And I asked my son, how do you learn to play an instrument? And, well, he didn't include this step, but I kind of figured this one out by myself. You start by listening to music. I don't know anybody that plays music that doesn't listen to music. And then you then have to develop an interest in actually playing an instrument. In other words, you can't take somebody that likes to listen to music and shove an instrument in their hand and say, thou shalt play this instrument or else. You might get them to play for a little while, but odds are that what's going to eventually happen is they're going to quit because they're not really interested in learning. But once they have a love of music, how do you learn to play an instrument? Well, you start by learning one note. You have to learn to play one note. And then after you play your one note, you know what comes next? You learn another one, and another one, and another one. And then you work on these things that are called scales, where you string the notes together. And if you've ever had a band student in your house learning to play an instrument, this is a painful process in your house, okay? Because they're playing the scales, and sometimes they hit them all, and sometimes they don't. And, you know, the middle school band teacher in Waynesboro used to do this exercise where he actually asked the students to play like they were the first day students, and it never sounded very good because he was trying to show how much they learned. So they have to learn these things. This is called scales, where they go up and down, and they begin to string their notes together. And then they put the notes together in an order, and they usually get a book, and it has all the notes in it, and they begin to follow the music that other people wrote together as a group. And maybe eventually they get to the point where they begin to write some of their own music. And you know, you don't write your own music by sitting down with a piece of paper, right? And a little pencil, and you start to make jots and tittles and cymbals. You know how you do it, right? You make a few cymbals, and then you play a little bit. And then you make a few cymbals, and then you play a little bit. And this is what happens as you begin to move into this thing of playing an instrument. You begin to write, and that requires more playing of an instrument. But here's the thing. If you play long enough, somebody is going to ask you this question. How do I learn to play an instrument? And when that happens, you don't pick up a music textbook and a theory book. You know what you pick up, right? Your instrument. Because that's how you learn to play an instrument. And so this whole idea of teaching brings me to an interesting question. It's what did they teach? We look at that verse and we see there in that verse that it says that they devoted themselves. But we have to remember something. There was no Bible as we know it when the early church got around. So we had this picture of them pulling out a table, and everybody shows up with their scrolls, and everybody sits down, and they're going to parse through the Bible. That's not what they're doing. So I had to go out and do a little more research, and I began to ask people who I know were study bugs, and I actually reached out to a few ministers. And I asked them the question, what do you think the early church taught? And interesting, when I asked the question, everybody had to stop for a moment and think. Nobody just had this ready-made list. They were like, that's a good question. What did they teach? And so after going around and talking and remembering that they had no Bible, and then also remembering when you see the word scripture in the New Testament, they're always talking about the Old Testament. And then taking into account, even when they did, they didn't have easy access to the written copies. Thus, they're working all of this stuff off of their memorization. I began to compile a list of what people thought they taught. So here's the list, and it might surprise you a little bit. We definitely know they taught baptism and the Lord's Supper. Right out of Acts, it's not very hard to see as you turn the pages, baptism and the Lord's Supper is all over the place. Okay? So we definitely know they taught this. Prayer seemed to be a really big deal, right? It was important enough to where the apostles went and asked the main teacher, Jesus, to teach them. And as you turn through the book of Acts, they are constantly praying. So I got this theory that when they gathered together and they devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings, prayer was on that list. I know why I'm echoing now. There you go. I'll take care of that. That'll make it easier. I won't sound like I'm talking to you twice. You only get to hear it once. Absolutely, they taught serving and the fellowship of believers, plus the concept of unity, and they even taught stewardship in the body. So that was among the list. If you don't believe me, go back and read Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47. How do you know they were teaching it? Because that's what they were doing. Okay, that was the main thing the church was doing. They were serving one another. They were fellowshipping with one another. They were gathering together, all together in unity, and they were giving stewardship. If people had something come up in the church that needed to be done, somebody said, I got it. I'll take care of that need. You go find another one. This one's mine. So we know this is what they're teaching. Much of their teaching probably centered around the retelling of the stories Jesus told and then discussing them. So this is probably how they did it. You know, the apostles would get together and they're having one of those meetings and they're talking about it. You say, you know, I remember that time when Jesus, and then they would go about telling the story of the feeding of the 5,000, or they would tell the story about how Jesus brought in all the fish and loaves, or maybe they would try to, from their memory, pull out one of those parables that he taught, and they would begin to discuss those things. So the stories of Jesus and the teaching of Jesus was definitely something that they taught. Connecting Jesus to prophecy about the Messiah. Remember, we're in a Jewish culture at this point. So they're trying to reach out to other Jews who have been looking for the Messiah their entire life. And like we see in that very first sermon when Peter was preaching, what did he do? He went to the painstaking trouble of going back to the beginning and tying Jesus through all of the prophecies and saying, this is why Jesus was who he was, is because we can connect him to all those prophecies. So this is part of the teaching that they're probably putting out there. And as I began to ask around and question, you know what I finally figured out? That's it. When you read, they committed themselves, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, that's what they committed themselves to. Other doctrines and discussions, well, they started up until the gospel started to hit other cultures. You see that in Acts chapter 15. The doctrines and the philosophies of parsing the words, well, they didn't come together until much later because they had to wait for the words to be written by the Apostle Paul, who wrote 13 letters, and those are the ones we'd like to parse through. And then they had to wait for those letters to get out and get delivered and get hand copied. So that all started a whole lot later. They really had no traditions or holidays to celebrate other than the ones they were already celebrating as Jews. So there was no discussion about Christmas because Christmas was a concept that was, she was a coming. They probably didn't have a lot of discussion about whether they met on the first day of the week or the second day of the week. It probably wasn't a discussion. They just kind of met. As a matter of fact, they met every day. They had no building discussions. They didn't care. You know how I know they had no building discussions? Because they didn't have a building. They met in houses, so you can't discuss that which you do not have. Now, maybe someone, some bright person, one day said, you know, it sure would be a lot easier if I didn't have to tear my house apart or clean my house apart every week to do this. So why don't we buy a building? So maybe that happened. I don't know, but they didn't have building discussions, and there was no concern about the right way to do church because there was no way to do church at that point. They were, like it or not, making this up as they were going. They didn't get a manual from Jesus to say, this is how you set up a church. They were just getting together and hanging out and learning. They probably discussed when Jesus would come back. Oh, I know that had to be a discussion because everybody was waiting for it. But even that topic, they kind of got put in their place in Acts chapter 1, verses 6 through 10, when the angel looked at them and said, what are you looking for? He'll be back when he gets back. You got work to do. So that's not a big discussion that you need to have. But as time has gone on, we have made this much more complicated, haven't we? With every level of complication that we've added to this thing that we call church, there's more debate about this word or that word or how you do this or how you do that. And with every debate, one of the core doctrines of the original church, which was unity, has disintegrated. Because now I can't worship with that person because they don't do the things the way that I do them. And they can't be Christians because they don't do this. Stop it. We're taking away one of the core doctrines with that. We're taking away the idea of unity because our parsing of words is creating division. And then with every division, well, you know what happens. We have more doctrine that must be taught that has nothing to do with what it means to follow Jesus. It has to do with how do you play church. Until we get to the point where people think they need a college degree to teach at a church. We get there, folks. We've made this idea of teaching so complicated in the church that everybody's like, oh, not me. I'm not a teacher. That's not my skill set. That's not my love. Really? Do you know Jesus? Do you have a story that you can tell? Do you have a story that you can tell to somebody else that might help them understand Jesus a little bit better? Congratulations. I'd like to give you your teaching certificate because that's what they were doing in the early church. They were simply telling others about Jesus. So that's one side of the coin, teaching, but that's not our side of the coin. Today, what I really want to discuss is who was doing the teaching. It had nothing to, none of those apostles, well, they were, there wasn't a teacher amongst them. They were not scripturally arrogant, ignorant, but they had grown up in Jewish customs, so they knew all about being Jewish teachers. They were untrained, and they had spent 3 years with Jesus, but they were no super higher holy men. Nope, they weren't. At the beginning, remember, all of these men were bivocational teachers, so they had other jobs. So they weren't really teachers. You know what these men were? They were learners. You see, we read that verse, and they committed to the apostles' teaching, then you're not committing to learn the facts and figures so you can recite them for the test, Statler, the kid in the classroom. You're taking this and you're learning this and hoping to apply it to your life so that you can learn. See, the verse started with they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, so you have to actually learn them, right? That means they had to set their mind into a mode of learning when they came together. What new thing can I bring into my life that I can go teach somebody else? What does it mean to learn? If I actually go out there and I buy a book and I read the book and I memorize all the information and then they give me some kind of standard test and I can go down there and I can recite those tests and I can fill in the bubbles with the A, B, C, and D and I can get at least an 80%, does that mean I learned it? I don't know. I made a career in my school year getting school through school that way. I could pass any test you could give me. And then I got to college, and they wanted me to apply the things I learned. And college didn't go so well for me. Okay, it took me a couple tries to find my footing in college because I could give you the answers in the test, but I had no study habits. I wasn't a very good learner. So this morning I'm going to help you out. We're going to give you quickly four little phases of learning. We're going to call this Learning 101, and I think even though this is a scientific study they did on how your brain goes about learning things, I think you're going to quickly understand, wow, if I study God's Word this way, if I approach my Christian learning this way, then you know what? I think I might actually learn a little bit more. So the very first stage is called unconscious incompetence. Now, I'm not calling you incompetent, okay? All right, that is not what this is, so please don't take that out. It's called unconscious incompetence, which means in this stage, the learner isn't knowledgeable about the required set of information necessary for a role. This is where we all start, okay? Brandon was telling me the story about the guy that wanted to learn hunting, and so he went out to go hunting with Brandon. He knew nothing about hunting, but he had to go hunting to learn how to play hunting. Actually, he watched a YouTube video and decided he wasn't a hunter, is what Brandon told me, because, yeah, he didn't want to deal with the deer after it was dead. I get that. But we all start at the point that we don't know what we don't know, right? When you walk in off the street in the church and you come in, and let's say you've never heard the name of Jesus before, you don't know what you don't know about Jesus, right? And so this is all a learning process because we all have this unconscious incompetence that it just doesn't register, and all learning, according to Paul, has to start at this point with ignorance. 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 13. Even though I was once a blasphemer and a persecutor and a violent man, I was shown mercy because I acted in ignorance and unbelief. This is where the Apostle Paul started his Jesus journey. He was ignorant. Now, a lot of times we don't like that, but, you know, I find that when they hand me people to teach and they start off with the fact I don't know anything, those are the easier people to teach. The people that came in and kind of tried to tell me how to do my job, the people that come in to think they have all, those people aren't very easy to teach because ignorance has a great advantage to it. But you can't stay there. So if you're going to be a learner, and if you're going to grow, and if you're going to devote yourself to any kind of a teaching, you can apply this to anywhere in your life, you have to go from being conscious incompetence to conscious competence. And this is the phase. This is the stage typically described as learners who possess an understanding of the necessary skills. These learners may be amateurs who have beginner level knowledge of the industry. They may require instructions, tools, and helpful guides to complete tasks. At this stage, learners must practice more and notice their improvement. Any mistakes they make serve as learning opportunities to improve their expertise. I love this phase. As a matter of fact, I don't think I ever really want to leave this phase. Now, I will have to as I get older, but we all like this phase. But I do want you to see the solution to ignorance begins with knowledge and information. And actually, you know what I just did? I just made a really big mistake. I jumped down the whole thing, so I got to go back up. I'm terribly sorry. We're at conscious incompetence, and I dropped down a whole page. During this stage, the learners become aware of the gap in their deficit and their knowledge and their skills and the individuals who understand the information and skills learned. So, back up. We'll get to the other one in just a minute. Ignorance, knowledge, and information. But for ignorance to overcome, you must be a curiosity and a desire to learn. The heart of a discerning acquires knowledge, for the ears of the wise seek it out. Now, I do caution you about this particular of conscious incompetence when the idea of you're just collecting knowledge. A little knowledge can be a dangerous thing. Okay? Nothing about food sacrifices. We know that we all possess knowledge, but knowledge puffs up while love builds up. So I offer this caution because you know what? A lot of us, we get in this idea that we're just collecting information.
We have a desire to learn, but unfortunately, we just acquire the information. And now I can do what I just tried to skip over. Now we get to the point of conscious competence. And I won't read that definition to you again. Now I want you to see what you need to go from being basically just out there to actually getting confident about a topic. What does it say you need? Instructions, tools, and helpful guides. That's learning, right? If I'm going to learn something, I need a teacher, a helpful guide. I might need a book, a helpful tool. If I'm going to work on an automobile, it would help if I had several helpful tools, right? You ever tried to work on an automobile when you don't have the right tools? It's a disaster, okay? So I need these things to come into my life, and I have to be willing to accept those things. And as I do these things, I have to remember, do not merely be listeners of the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in the mirror and after looking at himself goes away immediately and forgets what he's looking at. So after I get all these things, you see what has to happen, right? I have to take what I've learned. You just get tired of practice, but you do understand the Bible works the same way. If all I ever do is accumulate the stories and accumulate the information and I never get up off the pew and go out there and put it into practice, then I'm actually not learning anything. I'm memorizing so that I can answer the questions on the test. So that when I get to heaven someday and I'm standing in front of Jesus and he says, okay, 60 seconds or less, tell me all the books of the Bible. That question's not on the test. Okay? So that I can tell him all of the different people and things. That question's not on the test. Because there is no test. This is about a relationship, a learning relationship. And I have to practice. And as I practice, here's what we kind of miss in the church. When I practice, what do I make? Mistakes. You can't grow in faith if you don't fall flat on your face sometimes. I've learned this over the years. Sometimes I think I've got it all together and I'm walking with God and I literally fall flat on my face and I'm like, did anybody see me do that? And I can't stay down there. I have to pick myself back up and say, well, that was a dumb move. What can I learn from the experience? And then I don't do that again. Okay, sometimes I do. It takes 3 or 4 times for me to fall flat on my face before I make the decision to try it a little bit differently. But you understand, in your Christian life, I'm giving you permission. You can make mistakes. And you will make mistakes. And mistakes are going to constantly happen until the day you're standing in front of Jesus. You will make mistakes. And some of them will be harsh. And some of them will be hard. And some of them you're going to learn from. And eventually as you make mistakes, you know it begins to happen, right? You improve. Hopefully you're not making the same mistakes today that you made when you were 5 years old, right? I cannot tell you the last time I jumped off a bus. I learned my lesson the first time. The ground is harder than my knees. Okay? I don't do those things anymore. I've learned better. And you know what else I've learned? I told my kids, guess what? If you jump off the bus, you will skin your knees. It's going to happen. Okay? It's just what worked. So I have passed on that information as I have begun to improve. I am teaching my kids things that I learned from my mistakes. You know the difference between wisdom and knowledge, right? Knowledge is the ability to learn from one's own mistakes. Wisdom is the ability to learn from somebody else's. When you hear the stories and you begin to say, I'm going to apply this so I don't have to make the same mistakes. This is that point in learning. And it's where you're going to stay for a lot of your life. You see, eventually you are going to move on, though, and you're going to get to unconscious competence. By the way, I'm working on this level still. I don't know that I'm really here when it comes to my faith, but just listen to this. At this stage, the learner has achieved mastery of the skill. After consistent training, practice, and studying, the learner becomes an expert at the task. These learners may perform tasks without active concentration. They also can multitask. At this stage, learners may be responsible for training other individuals who are new to the industry. So remember, to get to this phase, going to take a little work from you. Consistent training, committing yourselves to the training, to the teaching. It means that you're going to have to put in some practice time. I hate to tell you this. You're going to have to practice. You know where the best place to practice your Christian faith is? Here at the church. Therefore, when you make a mistake, you're not going to get booed and hissed and voted out of the church. You're going to have a loving family that's going to gather around you and say, let us help you back up and put you back on the path. That's the purpose of the church. It's going to take some studying on your own. So get ready. But what you get out of this is, well, they use the term expert. And I want to make sure you understand that doesn't mean perfect. Okay? I've got a lot of little certificates that I've hung on my walls over the years that declare me an expert at certain things. It does not mean that I do them perfectly. But you know what it does mean? It means that you do it and you don't really have to think about it. It just becomes a natural habit to you. Okay? Nobody has to get up in the morning and remind me to put my shoes on. Unless I'm working from home. I'm not really going to put my shoes on all day long. But you get it. Nobody has to use you to say, this is how you eat. And nobody has to take the spoon anymore and put it in your mouth and say, now chew. Nope, we've all got this figured out. I've watched this at Soup Sunday. You've got this figured out. Okay? We know how to eat. So it just becomes a second nature to you. And it means you can do it living in a world where you can multitask. So it means now I'm to the point that I can now take my faith and I can go out there and yeah, I'm going to still fall out there, but I can live it out there in the world while living my other life and you can still see all of this. It means, oh yeah, you can teach it. That's what it means. Paul tells us, I myself am convinced, my brothers and sisters, that you yourselves are full of goodness, filled with the knowledge of competent and incompetent to instruct one another. So that means every single one of us, if you've been doing this Christian thing for a while, guess what? You can teach it. There's somebody in this church that you can teach it to. Maybe it's a little one. Maybe it's an older one. Maybe it's somebody else. Somebody else you see going through the same thing that you went through. You can be a teacher. Because you have to understand you are a learner. The mark of a devoted learner has to be a committed teacher. If all you're ever doing is you're storing up the information in your head and you're making sure that you got it all there, and you can quote the most Bible verses and you can say your books backwards and forwards and maybe you can say them in alphabetical order, I don't know. But you realize if you can't explain who Jesus is and you can't explain that, then we have a learning problem, not a teaching problem. Because that which you know, you have no problem telling somebody else. I'm betting if I asked Brandon how to dress a deer, he could probably give me 10 simple steps, something like that. Okay, if I asked Benjamin how to play an instrument, he could sit down and show me the steps. I guess I could teach somebody how to work a computer, maybe. All of us have skills, but you know what? Are you to the point that if somebody says, hey, tell me about Jesus. Can you do it? If you could, then you know what? Welcome to the world of teaching. Because that's what they devoted themselves to.